Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a vodcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very accomplished leader from Dubai, UAE, Mr. Bruno Bianchini. Bruno, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ashutosh, for having me here. This is a very big pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bruno is a sustainability coordinator with Google, and he's a sustainability master student at Harvard University. So Bruno, before we talk sustainability, tell me about your own journey in brief and what got you interested in the area of sustainability.
Yeah, you know, this is a question that I usually like to answer because it ties back to my personal story. Mm-hmm. See, maybe a couple of points. Like, first is that I grew up on a farm in the north of Italy. So to me, sustainability has always been there, meaning right. Like, you know, I thought it would be a problem. Yeah. But then, like, you know, in sustainability, we like to talk about tipping points. Yeah. So the moments when a system moves from point A to point B. So I consider that my tipping point, for example, was in 2019. Mm. In that year, I crossed paths with an environmental activist who really opened my eyes about the environmental costs caused by our diets and also modern agriculture. Mm. Man, probably you know how, you know, we load our soils with lots of fertilizers, tend to spray, like, you know, fruit and vegetables with plenty of pesticides. Mm. We're cutting down forests, unfortunately, like, you know, to give space to modern agriculture. Mm. And to me, like, you know, one, for example, of the very first documentaries that I watched and was extremely critical was Cowspiracy. Mm-hmm. So the movie really speaks about, you know, the environmental impacts of the cattle industry in the U.S. And it shows also how corrupt agriculture, unfortunately, has become. Mm-hmm. So for me, growing up in a farm, you know, it was kind of a shock, you know, because again, like, you know, I was very much isolated from all of the wrongdoing of industrial agriculture. So that's how I got, let's say, inspired. And that's
very interesting. And, you know, Bruno, you've done your studies in corporate finance and business administration. How has this background influenced your approach to sustainability?
Yeah, thank you for this question. I guess that's my academic background helped me, I would say, in two ways. The first is that it really shaped the way how I approach sustainability today. Mm-hmm. It's very important to understand how companies tick. You know, this obviously helps me to push the sustainability agenda in a language that obviously businesses understand, mm-hmm. right? So, there are many that say, like, you know, oh, you know, we need to abandon capitalism. We need to rethink completely, you know, our economic structure. Mm. I don't disagree with that, but I also think that, like, you know, companies are such a big part of our world today, and they're not going to go anywhere. So again, being able to navigate that space with the right language, I think, is important. Mm. I feel that the second impact is maybe more personal. Studying corporate finance and business in general made me a realist. You know, I've learned to look for sustainable solutions that are not just good on paper, but they're actually, you know, doable also for businesses. Mm.
So Bruno, you're a sustainability coordinator at Google. How do you define sustainability and which areas do you focus on?
Okay, so I'll give you maybe first the more academic answer to that, because I think it's good as a ground. Mind you, like, you know, the words of sustainability comes from Latin word, which is sustinere, mm-hmm. Which means to sustain, which means to maintain, right? Studies of sustainability mostly draw the definition from what we call the concept of sustainable development, mm-hmm. right? I'm deeply passionate, for example, or I studied a lot, for example, the very first speech in 1972 from Indira Gandhi, one of the very first conversations around environmental impact. And from that, like, you know, it stems a lot of the understanding that sustainability needs to meet the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generation to meet their needs. Now, this is obviously a strong ground foundation to do some good work. I personally like this definition, but I think it has a lot to do with how can we be less bad? But I have a problem with that, right? Because if you think about the global economy that keeps on growing, doing less bad with something that keeps on growing is not going to do anything good, right? So this is why most of my work and my definition of sustainability tends to be around regeneration. So which means we need to enter into a relationship of reciprocity with Mother Earth. It means that not only we can be less bad, but we can actually become regenerative agents. So that's when that's the nuance that I like to bring to the concept of sustainability.
Very interesting. And Bruno, you know, you've been doing so much work on sustainability. It's a word that has now entered every corporate boardroom, and yet people don't understand. So I wanted to ask you, what are some misconceptions about sustainability that you have seen in the corporate world, and how would you dispel these?
Yeah, thanks for this question. Mind you, I think there are like so many misconceptions at the moment. Perhaps there are a couple for me that are top of mind. And they're really like, you know, close to, you know, the ethics and the way that I work in this space. The first one has to do with the fact that sustainability right now has become just a war against carbon emissions. But we know that there is much more than that. You know, like if you think about the loss of biodiversity, if you think about the impact on the oceans, if you think about deforestation, if you think about water use, right? So carbon emissions and climate change, mind you, is extremely important, but it is not the only thing. I like to quote my professor here. Says like, you know, imagine going to school and you have like, you know, 10 subjects that you need to be ready for to pass an exam. And then you go and, you know, you have these 10 questions to answer, and then you're ready to answer only to one question, which is carbon emissions. How do you think you're going to do? How well do you think you're going to score during that exam? Yeah, so this is a little bit like, you know, my my issue. And again, there is this big misconception that sustainability is only carbon emissions, and that's not it.
Interesting.
Does it make sense? Yeah,
it must. Absolutely. Go ahead, please. Please go ahead.
No, please, if you have another question, I'm okay. But like, you know, I have another misconception, which is, you know, to me, you know, I hear companies talking about like, you know, sustainability efforts are only for large corporations. And again, I think it's a major misconception because in reality, small and medium sized companies play an extremely crucial role in obviously driving sustainable practices. If you think about small companies, you think about agility, you think about innovation, and small companies are really capable of implementing sustainability solutions extremely fast and quickly, you know. So again, like, sustainability is not only for the big companies. I would say it's mostly for small business, because this is obviously what creates our economy, right?
Very interesting. And you know, Bruno, in your role at Google, you support companies in making smarter and more conscious business decisions. Can you share some insights into how you are supporting startups and SMEs?
Yeah. So perhaps I'll take this this question in two ways. The first is that my role specifically at Google ties a lot into the space of education and how we advance, sustainability practices at an advertising industry level. What do I mean by that? Obviously, sustainability can feel like quite daunting for many companies, right? And especially because there is lack of talent today. So I'm a very strong advocate that education is definitely the first step, So what we did and what I did, for example, last year, we launched a program that was called Green at Google.
Mm-hmm.
This program has the objective to reach our clients and our partners through a series of different workshops that stimulate sustainability conversations. So we developed content around 9 different topics, for example, sustainable marketing, waste, circularity, energy, and so on and so forth. The objective there was to really sit down with our clients and say, hey, this is what we do. What can you do? Right. Yeah. So this was like, you know, through a series of workshops. The other important element of my work at Google right now has mostly to do with trying again, as I said, like, you know, to advance the overall advertising industry understanding of sustainability. So specifically in this case, I sit at the advertising business group for the MENA region, where I try to advance sustainability marketing practices among our members. This has almost like, you know, two areas of work. The first has to do more about, hey, can we harness the power of marketing to actually, you know, shape mindset? How can we make sure that customers understand what sustainability truly is and how brands utilize the power of marketing to, you know, deliver messages that are important to support sustainability journey. And this is coupled with another piece of work that to me is extremely important that has to do, how do we avoid greenwashing? So greenwashing is this practice of, you know, putting a green leaf on a product or saying this is sustainably sourced. You know, it's very interesting, but still very fluffy claims that make clients think or make a customer believe, oh, you know, I'm doing something good by buying this and it's green. But actually, like, you know, you're driving even more environmental issues because, you know, a person at that point believes that, you know, they're buying a good product, but in fact, it is not. So how can we, so I'm really trying to work at an industry level to, again, create some of good practices to avoid greenwash.
Well said. Great response. Thank you. The other question that I had, Bruno, was that in most organizations that are looking for, you know, sustainable strategies, there's also a concern on how do we handle economic growth? So how do you recommend that, you know, organizations balance economic growth with the need for sustainability?
Yeah, thank you for this question. I generally believe this is like, you know, the usual $1 million question. Like, you know, how can I, you know, achieve economic growth while, you know, avoiding all of the environmental and social issues that we've been experiencing? I believe that this really begins at the foundational level of how we approach the design of products and services.
Right.
Now, if you think about it, like, you know, historically, economic expansions, as you said it in your question, like, you know, has often come at the expense of the planet. I believe it doesn't have to be this way, right? If you think that approximately 80% of environmental and social issues come from initial design choices. So what this means is that if you know this, you know, these realizations opens up a bit of a transformative opportunity, which is to design products and services that, again, by design, they eliminate waste, they eliminate toxicity, they eliminate pollution. This really ties into the concepts of what we call the circular economy, which means that we need to create systems that, again, maximize the longevity, the reuse, the value of the resources, right? So again, like, you know, this design approach really allows to reimagine growth in a way that, again, supports and regenerates the living system rather than depleting them. So again, like, you know, if you focus on regenerative design from the onset, again, like, you know, you shift immediately that question from how can my company's growth be less harmful to a question that is, how can our growth actually contribute to the regeneration, you know, of the planet and society's well-being?
Fascinating. Thank you.
Of course. Bruno,
you also must be working with many, many different organizations. What are some innovative technologies or solutions you have seen that have the potential to revolutionize sustainability when it comes to business?
Yeah, thanks for the question. So it's difficult to find, you know, silver bullet solutions nowadays, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we obviously need to look around and we need to look everywhere.
Yeah.
To me, you know, what I like to say is, why don't we think about innovation by looking at nature? Mm-hmm. Yeah, nature has been around for 4 billion years on this planet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it has evolved, you know, utilizing local resources, mm-hmm. Flowing energy, and circulating elements, right?
Yeah.
We tend to, like, you know, the economic model of humanity tends to use a lot of electricity, lots of energy, high temperatures, right?
Right.
But
right.
Look, complex elements. But if you look at nature, that's not what it does.
Mm.
So to me, the most important innovation, it's something that is called biomimicry, mm-hmm. right? So biomimicry means, hey, how can we actually copy? Yeah, how can we actually look at the best engineer that we have in this planet, that is, you know, Mother Nature, and how can we make sure that our products and services actually are designed, you know, on natural principles? And I want to give you one example. I came across this company that is called Spintex. Spintex came up with a whole different new material for clothing that really understand how spiders, for example, create their webs. So listen to this, because I find it extremely interesting. So, so spider silk, for example, is considered one of the strongest biological materials.
Right.
Yeah. So a spider's web can capture an insect, you know, as strong as a human-made net the size of a football field could trap an airplane. So imagine that. Imagine how strong. So when this company, Spintex, recognized the potential of the spider silk, they really wanted to replicate it and understood how spiders do. And again, spiders, if you think about it, you know, they don't have machinery, they don't increase temperatures, they don't go completely crazy on utilizing a lot of elements. What they do, they utilize their body for that. Now, I don't want to get, you know, too technical and too geeky into this, but, like, you know, the idea is that, like, you know, the way that, for example, the spider creates the silk is that it keeps you know, the material as a liquid in their in their body, and then when it goes out, they squeeze it in a way that they change the composition of the protein from liquid, it becomes solid. So what the Spintex did, they really studied what spiders do, and they say, hey, this is a silk fiber that is produced with very low energy and simple materials, exactly how spiders would do. So, you know, this is just, you know, again, it's one.
What a great example. Thank you.
Of course.
My next question, Bruno, and when I was reading about you and preparing for this conversation, you're also doing work in the area of sustainable farming and waste management. How have you overcome some of the key challenges in agriculture?
Thank you for this question. So I worked specifically with one company on the concept of agriculture. And again, like, you know, I was telling you, like, you know, I was raised on a farm. So so to me, the concept of how can we make agriculture regenerative is really top of mind. And again, like, you know, one of the challenges that you are that you're asking me is, we have become extremely specialized. So you have, for example, farms that produce cotton for 6 months of the year, and then the other 6 months they don't produce anything. And then you have other farms, for example, that, you know, they raise chickens. So this heavy specialization, like, you know, also segregated, you know, on the one side the crops, on the other side the animals, right? So the idea is, again, how does nature do this? Nature doesn't segregate. Nature keeps on integrating different things.
Right, right.
So this means, hey, can I have, for example, a farm that integrates both, you know, growing the crops and at the same time also, you know, different crops? You know, you could, for example, like, you know, plant cotton, and at the same time, you know, you could plant, you know, something else. You know, one line could be cotton, the other line could be another crop. Yeah. Or how can I integrate, for example, animals? Some of the farms, for example, that I visited recently, you know, at the end of the harvest, they let animals come in and graze whatever is left so that they get, you know, you utilize animals in a way that are fully integrated in the farm. So going back to your question, what is the challenge? The challenge almost is the curse of our, efficiency mindset, which is the more I segregate, the more I become specialized. But again, the more then I underutilize resources, and again, like, you know, nature integrates rather than segregates, right, which means, hey, how can I actually break down this challenge of specialization? And almost, can we go back, like, you know, hundreds of years and look how actually agriculture was done? So yeah, that's well said.
So we don't have time for two more questions for you.
Yeah.
My next question is that, you know, what would you say is one of the most unexpected lessons you have learned about sustainability while working with so many people?
Yeah. So I would say, I don't know if it's truly unexpected, but to me, there are two main lessons that I think that are with me. The first one is that, again, as simple as it can sound, but one of the most humbling lessons I learned is that it's impossible to achieve infinite economic growth on a finite planet. Yeah, so if you look at our planet, it's a beautiful sphere, you know, going around the sun.
Yeah.
Again, as big as it can be and as big as it can feel to us, ultimately it's finite. Yeah.
Correct.
So our economy now has grew so much that the resources from Mother Earth and the seeds of our waste are becoming so small that, you know, like, the world has become small for us. Yeah. So again, like, you know, it's to me, it was quite unexpected. And again, because probably I was a bit naive, you know, I grew up on this little farm in the north of Italy. So I would never expect the human enterprise to reach to a level to actually be too big to be supported by our planet. So that's lesson number one. Lesson number two, and I hope I'm not going to be too controversial here, but I think technology actually will save us. If you look at, you know, technological advancements, they helped humans, civilization perhaps, to progress, but again, at the expense of other species and nature, right? Technology, for example, after the Second World War, what we call the Green Revolution, you know, so all of the chemicals that were utilized and still today for, fertilizers, pesticides, that yes, are good because they increased agricultural production, but pesticides are killing lots of insects, lots of species that we need today to pollinate our products, our farms. Or if you think about, like, you know, overloading soils from fertilizers, and now, you know, they're creating dead zones in oceans. So again, there is this concept of, technology seems to be, like, you know, the big solution. However, there is a feedback loop somewhere else.
Yeah.
There is a side effect somewhere else. You know, like, we always think linearly, but it's never like that. Like, if A impacts B, the question is, how does B impact B? How does B impact A on the other way around, right? So, two things. One is, we're on a finite planet, so infinite growth is not possible. The second one is, think about feedback loops, because again, technology cannot be the only solution.
Yeah. Very interesting. And on that note, Bruno, and your two wonderful lessons, it is impossible to achieve infinite growth, so don't have such expectations. And second, you said you don't think technology will be the only solution to save us. Think of feedback loops. Thank you so much, Bruno, for speaking to me about your own amazing journey. Thank you for talking to me about sustainability and so many different aspects of sustainability that we covered today. Thank you for talking to me about the way you and your role from Google are supporting so many small and medium enterprises to be able to start off on their journey on sustainability. Thank you for what you're doing for the planet. Thank you for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.